Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grit, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good morning and welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club, the final Sports Hub Golf Club of the season. I mean, there's a lot of things coming to an end at this time of year. Yesterday evening, Tony Maserati had his final baseball reporters of the season. If it seems like it's wrapping up early this year, that's because the Red Sox are wrapping up early this year. Oh, yeah, last year the baseball reporters went for another month. But Tony essentially gets an hour cut off his day for a month this year. So while Maz loves doing the show, that's kind of how it goes. I believe the Dong Report wrapped up last night. Kristen Sermon, our producer here this morning, I know you're a faithful listener of the Adam Jones program. Do you know if that's the case? Because I saw some stuff on Twitter, and I saw something from either Jones or Arcan last night. Do you know if last night was the last Dong Report of the season? I believe it was. And I think Jeremy Connolly did his last. So anyway, my point is this. This is the last Sports Hub Golf Club of the year, and it's always been like this. You know, we go through September. It actually seems like maybe a little bit longer this year because generally we had one more tournament, one more big tournament to talk about in the Boston area, and that was, of course, the Deutsche Bank Championship, which became the Dell Technologies Championship over Labor Day weekend. And we got, it certainly had that to look forward to and that to talk about during Labor Day, and then, you know, some carryover from that for the final few weeks of the show. Didn't have that this year, and we really won't even have it again next year. The tournament will be back next year, the Northern Trust, but it's going to be played in the beginning of August, or, you know, second weekend in August, and the Sports Hub Golf Club will wrap up at the end of September, just like it always has now for 7 years. So it's been great, and thank you very much, but we still got a show to do today. So first things first, and really this is kind of the reason why we wrap it up. Whereas, you know, we might keep playing and enjoy ourselves out on the golf course for another couple few months. Hopefully, you know, if you're down the Cape, you may be lucky enough to play at one of those courses like, you know, I know the Captains out in Brewster. They've got 36 holes out there. They'll try and keep a full 18 open the entire season as long as they're, you know, not snow-packed. And other courses down the Cape will stay open. But as far as the PGA Tour goes, and a lot that we talk about on this show, there's not a whole lot going on right now. And this has been the struggle of the PGA Tour and kind of the odd thing in their schedule now for years. The fact that once the season wraps up, and it wrapped up earlier this year than it ever has before, as a means to avoid conflicting anything and trying to take attention away from football, that they're not even going to try. So they wrapped up the tour championship early. It's all done even before college football really started. However, the 2019/2020 PGA Tour season, as I'm sure you know, already started. It started a couple of weeks ago. They get like a less than 2 weeks off before the new season starts again. Why do they do this? What's going on? Well, the reason why they do this is for players who are trying to essentially earn money and earn tour status by way of the money list have a chance to get out and play in some of these tournaments. Now, whether or not these tournaments count toward FedEx Cup points or count toward, you know, Ryder Cup status for upcoming years or President's, and that's, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as much as guys just, and I don't want to say that it's just struggling players. Obviously, if you look at leaderboards here for the last couple of weeks, it's not just struggling players or guys on, you know, on the bubble. There are, of course, you know, real players in the field, just not as many. And many, many players don't even think about playing more than a fall series event or two. You know, in the case of Tiger Woods, he's going to play in Japan. And we talked about the skins game that he's going to play. And there are a lot of guys who just, you know, they barely make an appearance here in the fall. These tournaments are mostly, I will say, to benefit guys who want to make some cuts, want to earn a few checks, get their status up in terms of money earnings on the tour in an effort to keep their tour card and stay on tour. Okay? All right, good. This is why, and you know what I'm getting at, this is why it bothers some people that Tony Romo once again took the spot of some player who really needs this event by competing in the Safeway Open. This is the biggest story right now in golf. Not the fact that Bryson DeChambeau shot an 8-under-64 in the second round yesterday. He's 12-under-par for the tournament. Or Nick Watney. Remember Heidi Watney, Red Sox reporter? Nick Watney, her cousin, still out there on tour. A great second round yesterday, 65. He's 2 strokes off the lead. That's not the... Now, we're not talking about those guys. We're talking about Tony Romo, the story from the Safeway Open, the fact that he once again took a sponsor's exemption to play in a tournament that I don't want to say he had zero hope of competing in, because, man, did he make me nervous yesterday. Tony Romo went out yesterday and... I really defied my expectations and the expectations of a lot of people, I should say 2 days ago, in the opening round, and shot a 2-under-70. Oh, what? Romo, what are you doing? What are you doing? This goes against everything I've been saying about you and writing about you for years, that you got no business being out there. Tony Romo, phenomenal player. He's really, really good. He's got no business playing with PGA Tour players. It's just, it's not what you should be doing. And I'm not saying he can't do anything. Of course, you can do whatever you want. You're not going to make the cut. He's played in 3 events before this, and as I said last week, he finished DFL in all of them. Dead freaking last. Forget about making the cut. Not even close to making the cut. So when he goes out on Thursday and makes 5 birdies, Romo makes 5 birdies in his opening round, along with 3 bogeys, birdies the final 2 holes to make to shoot a 2-under-par-70. I just thought, oh God, no, please, please, no, please, no. I did not think he would have a fall to earth in quite the fashion that he did yesterday. And I'm not, I have nothing against Romo as a guy or, and Hart, are you just jealous? Of course I'm jealous. I'm jealous of a guy who played quarterback in the NFL for all those years. And, oh, by the way, happens to be a phenomenal golfer, but not to the point where he belongs out there, and especially taking a spot from a guy who really needs it in order to get out there, make a cut, make a check, and hopefully hold on to his tour card for another year or even just earn it the first place. So Romo goes out yesterday, and I was watching the leaderboard. I didn't have a chance to watch his entire final round. And to their credit, the Golf Channel, they did a lot of check-ins, but they did not treat this as... a lot of people used to complain about Tiger Woods' coverage. You know, Tiger Woods would be nowhere near the top of the leaderboard, but since people just want to know a Tiger, and they would follow Tiger around, and they would ignore whoever was on top of the leaderboard. They did check-ins on Romo, and they certainly talked about him enough, but it wasn't nauseating. So even if I had been watching it yesterday, I wouldn't have seen too much. I did watch toward the end of his round. Here's how Romo's second round started yesterday. And by the way, he went out early on Thursday. And that makes a difference in terms of playing conditions. Most players will say that the conditions are easier in the morning, and that as things dry out and the wind picks up, and just, you know, in general, the course conditions get tougher in the afternoon, which is why they will stagger the tee times. In the opening round, if you play early, round two, you'll play late, and vice versa. So Romo played early on Thursday, shot a 70. Yesterday, he tees off late. He teed off, I believe it was about 4:30 Boston time. And the Safeway Open is being held out in California, Napa. So Romo tees off late yesterday. What does he do? Pars the first hole. Oh, no. And we thought the cut was going to be right around, thinking it was going to be one under. And I'm thinking, if he goes out and shoots even par today, he's gonna make the cut. Kind of ended up being two under, so that would have done it. And he pars the first hole. Romo then goes bogey, makes a couple of birdies to get him right back, but then bogeys four straight holes on 6, 7, 8, and 9, makes the turn. Couple of pars, couple of bogeys, couple of pars, one more birdie before he finishes, and a bogey on 17. He shot a 6 over par 78 in the second round and essentially missed the cut by a lot. It ended up being a lot, to the point where I believe at one point he was in a tie for 24th. He finished way, way down the list. He did end up beating a few guys. So I will say this for Tony Romo. He is no longer DFL in all PGA tournaments played. He did beat the likes, such luminaries as Colt Nost and Byung-Hun An and Byron Meth. Kevin Stadler is the one name that I truly know on the list of guys that he finished better than, but it was, I think, exactly 10 guys who either finished one or two strokes worse than Tony Romo and missed the cut by more than he did. So that's it. The Tony Romo, the latest Tony Romo experiment on the PGA Tour is now over. He still has an incredible amount of game. We saw that on display on Thursday. The guy went out in his first round, you know, in front of a PGA Tour crowd and made 5 birdies, 3 bogeys, no doubles. He didn't blow up on any hole. You know, he makes a birdie on 18. I thought he birdied the last. No. He started on 10. So I'm looking at his scorecard right now. He did birdie 8 and 9. Those were his last two holes on Thursday. So he birdies his final two holes, you know, in an actual PGA tournament. This is not the Celebrity Pro-Am in Reno. This is an actual event, and he's got a ton of game, and he can absolutely play, just not at this level. He just can't. So as I was sitting here last week and chuckling at the notion that CBS was going to have to find someone to fill in for him on Sunday, and I said, don't worry, CBS, Romo will be in the booth for that Bears-Vikings game on Sunday. There is no chance in hell that he is unable to work on Sunday because his golf will be done by Friday afternoon. He made me very nervous with that opening round, 2 under par, but he fell back to earth and finished very, very close to the bottom of guys who did not make the cut and will not be playing this weekend. And again, this is the one thing, and this is what the PGA Tour weighs, and they probably don't think about it as much as I am. But he gets attention on this tournament. Not a lot of people paying attention to the Safeway Open because, again, not a lot of huge names competing in this thing. They don't need to. The guys who need to be out there. And some of them make commitments due to sponsorships or they just want to play. Bryson DeChambeau doesn't need to play, but he wants to. Justin Thomas doesn't need to play, but he wants to. He's out there. And Francesco Molinari. You know, there's a handful of names out there who are out there just because they want to play. But mostly these tournaments are for the guys who need it. You know, think about Rob Oppenheim, local guy. He was right there with Romo, like 200 par after the first round. Rob Oppenheim is a guy who's been, you know, back and forth on the tour a couple of times now. Really good guy. A guy who needs, you know, to make this cut and to make a check and, you know, solidify his tour status for another year. And there are a lot of guys who are even in a more precarious position than, you know, a local guy like Oppenheim who need it even worse than him. Romo's taken away that spot. The sponsor exemption given to Romo could be a spot for another guy who's actually got a chance of being on the PGA Tour someday, which Romo does not. Champions Tour, okay, I don't think so either, but Champions Tour maybe one day. But what the PGA Tour has to weigh is he does get eyeballs on it. He does get people watching it. He got me to pay attention to the Safeway Open, where generally we would not be spending a lot of time talking about the Safeway Open right now. But because Romo was playing in it, yeah, we talked about it. And I'm sure he's good for a few more tickets and a few more eyeballs on TV. And if the PGA Tour thinks that's more valuable to them than actually giving that spot to a player who's got a chance at sticking around and playing on this tour for a few more years, that's the decision they have to contend with every time Romo wants to tee it up there or the AT&T in Texas, or they want to give him an exemption to get in the Puerto Rico tournament, whatever the case may be. I tell you what, though, the guy can play. He can play. Just not at this level. It's a different game. It's a different game. Adam Jones. What the hell is Adam Jones doing up at this hour? He texted me a few minutes ago. Final Dong report was last night. Hashtag confirmed. Thank you, Adam. I thought so. Sad end to a glorious, glorious feature, but it will, of course, be back next season. All right. If you missed my conversation earlier this season with Rick Riley, he wrote a fantastic book. It's called Commander and Cheat. Hardy, does it have anything to do with what's going on with the president this week? How dare you? Of course not. I just think it's a really good book. It's a funny book. If you can put your politics aside and just chuckle at somebody who is such an absurd cheater in the game of golf, then you'll really enjoy Rick Riley's book, Commander and Cheat. And I've spoken with both people on both sides of the political spectrum who have read this book and enjoyed it since I talked with Riley a while back. But if you have not, maybe this will inspire you to pick it up and read it. My conversation with Rick Riley and his book, Commander and Cheat, coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, a man who is an expert in sports, in golf, and in cheating in golf because he wrote a book about Donald Trump. His name is Rick Riley.
Yeah, I thought you were saying I'm an expert on cheating. I guess I have become an expert. I hope not because I'm cheating, because I don't. What I thought was going to be a article for Sports Illustrated or The Athletic turned into an entire book.
Well, Rick, I got to say that, you know, initially when I was reading this, to borrow from a Seinfeld episode where his dentist starts telling Jewish jokes after he's converted, you know, you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
Someone asked Seinfeld if this offends him as a Jew, and he said, "No, it offends me as a comedian." This, you know, I started reading your book. I'm like, "Oh, I'm not offended as a voter. This offends me as a golfer."
Yeah, it's not. I don't know about politics, but I know about golf and played it my whole life. My whole family plays it. I have a 91-year-old aunt who still wins her flight. I mean, we have a family tournament. And then nobody does what Trump does, which is to say, calls in and says he won it from another state. He says he's won 20 club championships, but some of those weren't even, he wasn't even in the same state.
Rick,
one time he wasn't even in the country, he was in Singapore.
There's so much to get to. So first things first, the name of the book is Commander and Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump. Let's just start with a handicap, because this is the only one that I had heard about Donald Trump when it came to playing golf before he was president or anything else. What does the president say his handicap is?
He says he's a 2.8. But if you ever go to gin.com and look up a guy's handicap to see if he's what you're going to play?
Sure.
So you go to gin.com and type in Donald Trump, Florida, and up comes his handicap, and it's 2.8. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, wait a minute. I've played with this guy. You know, he's not bad. He's maybe a 9, a 10.
Yeah.
Pretty good player.
Really good. Like, a 9 or a 10 is really good.
Yeah, of course. I think only 3% of people over 70 are single digits. So that's fantastic. But then you see 2.8 and you're like, what? Then I see, you know, to get your handicap, you use your latest 20 scores. Well, do you realize his last 20 scores took him 8 years to post?
Wait a second.
Like,
he plays
2018, he posted once. In 2017, twice. In 2016, once. Now, last year, we know he played 66 times. So he's the worst kind of guy. Like at my club, if you finish your round and nobody go and you don't post your score, mm-hmm. and say it's low, mm-hmm. guys will go in and post a 69 on you.
Right.
You have to post your score.
Yes.
Because we don't cheat each other.
No.
But here's a guy, he's taken 8 years. And then you know about slope, right? So there's rating and
sure.
there's slope.
Of course.
I think there's only like 10 courses in America, even from the back tees, are over 142 slope. All his slopes are 140, 42, 144. Like, you're just screwing with the slope to make your handicap lower, you cheater.
Okay, so that's number one, reverse sandbagger. All right, we'll just call it that. You
cocktail,
mentioned...
Yeah, cocktail party handicap.
Exactly, yeah. You're just trying to impress people with your handicap. Okay, that's number right. one. If memory serves, you kind of start off the book talking about his 18 club championships. Is that how many he claims to have?
Well, at the time I was writing the book, it was 18. Now it's up to 20.
Okay, and but, how many were you able to document? I know the answer, but this is great.
Well, of the 18, I could document none. 16 I know to be lies, and 2 I couldn't quite get confirmed. So let me tell you some of the ways he arrives at 18 club championships.
Yes.
And mind you, these are his words. This is what got me off my couch, because I'm not a political guy, but I'm a golf guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like... He said, I beat the best guys at my clubs, and that's without strokes. I'm really good, and that's why you should vote for me, because I'm a winner. And I'm like, well, no, because you told me one day how you did it, which is anytime you open a new golf course, and he has 15, you play the first round by yourself and declare that the club championship. So beating yourself still wins you the title. That's wrong.
Yes, yes.
And then... I heard a story about him winning at playing at Trump Philadelphia the day they played the club championship one day at Trump Bedminster, and that's 87 miles away. And he called in and said, hey, I played really good today. Make me the club champion. They're like, what? No, Joe Schmo won with 74 or whatever. No, I shot 72 up here. And so they took down poor Joe Schmo and put up Donald J. Trump. And then it turns out the caddy said, I shot 82. What's he talking about? So there's that. Then a bunch of them, and maybe only your audience will understand this, were not club championships. They were seniors club championships or super seniors. And sometimes at some clubs, that's 70 and over. And even those, I couldn't get anybody to say it was legit. They're all like, yeah, but he wasn't putting out and stuff like that. So you're like, this is all faker than a big vat of cheese whiz.
Yeah. You take that and you take the handicap thing and you could say, all right, these are victimless cheating crimes in golf. The ones that right. stuck out to me, Rick, and it's Rick Riley here, Commander and Cheat is his new book about Donald Trump and golf. The ones that stick out to me, there are two stories. There's one about an actual club championship where he's playing a 15-year-old and Mike Tirico. Could you kind of like sum up those two stories? Because these are the ones that really bothered me.
So, you know, he only plays at his own courses now. And that's it. He doesn't play any public courses. He doesn't play Wingfoot where he's a member. And when I called guys at Wingfoot, they said he can't get a game here anymore because he cheats too much. The guys got sick of it. And in fact, that's where he got the nickname Pele because he kicks the ball so much. So I started trying to find people that had actually played against him in tournaments at Wingfoot, and I found a 15-year-old guy. I think his name was Levin, Zach Levin or something. And the 15-year-old was down four with five holes to play, and he was really miffed at Trump because he called, you know, ticky-tack like he was in the hazard, and as he took the club back, it might have brushed a tree or something. I mean, brushed a grass. And he said, no, you touch the club in the hazard, you lose the hole. And another time, he was just off the green and he fixed a ball mark on the green, which of course is illegal, but pretty tic-tac.
Right.
So he lost that hole. And he said, the guy was just, he said, this guy Trump was just being a jerk to my parents and everybody. And then with five to go, he's down four, and Trump goes, well, the kid put up a good fight, didn't he? Good fight. And this 15-year-old's like, screw you.
Right.
And he proceeded to win four of the next five. They go to extra holes. He wins on the second hole. And he said Trump didn't even shake his hand. And he said, so from that day forward, I knew that he was not a man of honor. Like we, this game is about honor and etiquette and integrity.
Right.
You'd rather lose every round than cheat. Okay, so it's not so, you say victimless crimes. I don't, because people got robbed of club championships. They won, and suddenly their name isn't on the wall anymore. But okay, but here's what he does. Sometimes he takes your ball and steps on it, throws it, kicks it in the bunker. And so Mike Tirico was playing at Trump Philly with John Gruden and Josh Jaworski, and it's Tirico and Jaworski against Trump and Gruden. It's a blind par five up the hill. Tirico hits the shot of his life. He's going to have a putted eagle. They can't believe it. He flies up to the green. He's so happy. But anytime you play with Trump, he's always 200 yards ahead of you.
Because he's driving the car that's twice as fast as everyone else's. Yeah,
yeah, he has a guy that messes with the governor.
Right,
so
right.
He can go 50 while your car goes 20. But anyway, by the time Tirico gets there, it's not on the green. It's not near the pin. It's in the bunker 50 feet left. And Tirico checks the mark. Is that my ball? It is my ball. I'm like, how the hell? And the caddy's like, what the hell? Did it hit a bird? They couldn't believe it. And of course, as you figure, he might. So he leaves it in the bunker, chops it out, three jerks it, makes a seven, loses the $20 to Trump. Fine. Trump buys cheeseburgers and everybody's fine with it. But in the parking lot, he finds out Trump kicked it in the bunker.
To me, this is, look, if I'm going to go play with him right now, if he's a legit 9 or 10, I'm not going to beat him straight up. And the only successes I'm going to get on the course that day are when I'm like Mike Tirico and I hit a career 3-wood and have a legitimate eagle putt. If I were to find out later that he took that ball and threw it in the bunker.
But he didn't find out until after the round.
Right.
But see,
right.
You have one fallacy there. He doesn't play. He doesn't tell people he's a 9. He's never said he's a 9. He says he's one of the best players among all the rich people. Now, that would include Scott McNeely from Sun, who's a scratch and whose son is probably going to be on the PGA Tour. So no freaking way is he the best among the rich people. But he still says he's a 3. So now he has to not only cheat to win, he's got to cover those 7 shots. You know, everybody I talked to, they said the same thing. Oh, it was really fun. You know, he took mulligans. He didn't putt out. You could tell his caddies threw it out, but it was fun. I mean, one time in L.A., he was playing a money game, hits it in the water, takes the super cart. He's always first. He never plays honors. He's just first guy every time.
Yeah, he does first off
the
tee every time.
They get up to the pond with a ball. They saw the big splash ripples right in the middle of the pond. It's on the fairway. And they go like, Donald, what the hell? And Trump goes, I guess it was the tide. I don't know.
The tide in the pond.
The tide.
I tell you, that was the one thing that was kind of disheartening to me reading this book. And it's Rick Riley here, Commander in Cheat is the name of his new book. So many of these guys had that same reaction. They're like, yeah, he cheats and he's rude and he lies about himself and he lies about me. You know, Lee Trevino saying that, you know, he was lying about my score to people in the clubhouse. Now he's embarrassed by it. But then they come away saying, oh, it's fun. It's great fun.
When we knew him in sports, which we knew him for 30 years, it was fun. But now it kind of matters because, you know, Arnold Palmer always said he never got into a business deal unless he played golf with the guy first. He said, you know, if you're going to cheat me on the course, you're going to cheat me in business.
Right.
Or you're going to cheat on your wife or, you know, or you're going to lose your temper out here. You're going to lose your temper in the meeting. I don't want that guy around. So people can say, it's just golf. But we all know that golf is a window into the soul, how you behave. Do you cheat your friends when it's really easy to cheat in golf? That's the point. That's the point, man. If you're 200 yards away from me, you got to trust that I'm not foozling the ball. And I got to trust that you're not. And we're going to play fair and we're going to have a beer and shake hands afterwards. But if he cheats at golf, what else is he cheating at? Well, I'll give you some examples. He said, there's no such thing as climate change. Except at Dunebeg, one of his courses in Ireland, he is suing right now to put up a 2,000-foot seawall that's 10 feet high because, quote, climate change, unquote, is causing, quote, rising sea levels, unquote, that's ruining the golf course. So, I mean, are you gonna lie to us about climate change or you're lying to them? Which is it?
I know we're short on time here, so I want to ask you one more question, Rick. Tiger Woods, of course, just won the Masters. He's had a relationship with Donald Trump over the years, as have a lot of guys that we know about around here. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. You write about Mike Ruzioni in the book, and he's a Boston guy.
And Brad Faxon,
exactly. So. Tiger now, I guess, is going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Donald Trump. Does he maintain a relationship with Donald right now? What do you know about that?
Well, he does. He does, and he's played with him twice now, I think. And anytime someone criticizes him for playing with the president, because here's the reason it's hypocritical. The Tiger Woods Foundation is this terrific foundation that he's really involved in, and they teach underprivileged kids the joys of golf, the etiquette of it, get them out there outside, meet a whole different kind of person, perhaps, that helps them maybe later in education. So that's cool, right? But Trump has said three times publicly now, including in Golf Digest, that golf should be aspirational. He says, you want to play golf, you aspire to play golf, so you do well in business, you join a country club, and that's how you get to play golf. All this other stuff is bad for golf. And the Golf Digest guy's like, what? Are you serious? Yeah, I know it's controversial, but I think that's how it should be. So in other words, Donald Trump doesn't think poor people deserve golf. Tiger Woods obviously does. The first tee does. Arnold Palmer thought so. So how can he take the Medal of Freedom from a guy who doesn't stand for anything Tiger believes? Furthermore, Trump cheated Tiger in a round with Dustin Johnson and Faxon, in which he hit two balls into the water, dropped, hit it on. He's putting for seven in a bet against Tiger, and Tiger's in for birdie three, and Trump gets a shot on the hole. So Tiger says, what are you putting for, Mr. President? This is after two balls in the water, and he says, four. So how can you respect a guy that tried to cheat you?
Well, Rick, again, it comes back to how we started this thing. It doesn't offend me as a voter. It offends me as a golfer. But it's...
As somebody said, it's both a knee slapper and a head slapper.
It is.
Because one minute you're laughing, and the next minute you're like, oh my God, how could this guy think he can get away with that? But you know what? He has gotten away with it. And he's your president golfer. And like, he's, to me, he's putting a big orange splotch on golf. That really hurts the game. I wish he would stop.
Commander and Cheat is the name of the book. Rick Riley has written a really good one. Great stuff, Rick. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Kylie.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Joining us now on the Sports Hub Golf Club is the co-founder of the Athletic Brewing Company. His name is Bill Shufelt. Bill, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Hardy, thank you very much. It's an honor to talk to you. As a lifelong Boston sports fan, it's exciting to be on. Thank you.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure, especially when we're going to talk about something that I think might be a big hit on golf courses, if it isn't already. The Athletic Brewing Company is all about non-alcoholic brews. And as a guy who doesn't drink, I, for one, get tired of being out on the golf course and drinking nothing but water, Gatorade. If I feel like I need a little something else, I might have a Coke or a Diet Coke. But it's just, what can I say? It gets a little boring drinking the same stuff over and over again. And I think maybe, just maybe, you had the same notion when you started this company that's all about non-alcoholic beer.
100%. Yeah, so I never considered selling non-alcoholic beer for a living or starting a company, that's for sure. I had a really good day job. I was happy in my life. I liked all sorts of participatory sports, golf definitely being among one of the top ones there. And there was no beer that fit so many different elements of my lifestyle. Like, anything from eating out at bars and restaurants to sports to barbecue, spending time with family, golf. So I teamed up with our incredible co-founder and head brewer, John Walker, who has been widely recognized on the national landscape of alcoholic craft beer brewing awards. And he saw the potential in this to make a positive impact. But that's really what we're going for, is a fully fermented real beer that just happens to not have any alcohol and a fraction of the calories. So you end up drinking these beers either if you're at a nice dinner with friends or on the golf course. You get rehydrated, you feel good, and then you don't have to deal with the consequences hours down the line.
If we could, I just want to talk about the ones that I've tried so far. Run Wild, which to my palate, definitely the most flavorful of them. But man, that tastes like beer. And that is, you have to have, I think, what would be a pretty sophisticated beer palate to drink a Run Wild and enjoy it, because man, that's got a lot of flavor to it.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, that's exactly what we're going for, is a really, it's basically like a super sessionable IPA. It's got an organic Vienna malt backbone, five different Northwest hops. And that's our most highly awarded beer in both the US and EU. And it's definitely our main flagship. It kind of ranges anywhere from like a really light, refreshing beer that you can have on weekends, but it has enough complexity that you could have it with your weeknight dinner as well.
The other one one of the other ones I tried was the Upside Dawn, which is, I guess, like a golden ale. And again, we're not talking about like super high in calories. I think 50 calories in this thing, and it's automatically got a bit of a lighter taste to it.
Yeah, so it comes in at 50 calories, so half of even the lightest beers. That's definitely it's super refreshing, really crushable. It's definitely our lightest beer, but it's got a good hoppy flavor to it as well. I mean, talk about your perfect golf course beer. I mean, people are really just looking for hydration and something fun to drink on the golf course. And that's exactly that. It's not going to throw up your score. You'll have fun out there. It's the full beer experience without dealing with everything down the line.
Now, the other one that I tried, which was my favorite, and this may be a seasonal one, the Cerveza Atletica, I think is what it was called. This one was really nice, and maybe just because I sampled them all on a really hot day, this one seemed to go down the nicest, had a really nice dry finish to it. This seemed like one that I could get into.
This has definitely been a really fun beer for the summer, Cerveza Atletica. It's a Mexican-style copper ale, which is, it's got just enough heartiness that it keeps you going throughout the day, but it's like the perfect refreshing beach beer. It's super light, not hoppy, and literally can't keep it on the shelves this summer. So it's been a lot of fun.
All right, Bill Schufeld is on the phone right now from the Athletic Brewing Company. Have you had success getting these out onto golf courses, onto beverage carts, clubhouses, stuff like that?
For sure. And anywhere it goes, it's definitely been like well-received. We're throughout Connecticut, we're at a bunch of different golf courses, probably 25 or so. And then we're starting to pop up on golf courses all the way from the Cape up to Boston. I know we're definitely at Brookline and a few other just outside of the city there. But yeah, people want to have beers out there and have fun with friends and don't want to affect their score on the golf course. And it is naturally full of electrolytes, potassium, calcium. So there are rehydrating elements.
Bill Schufeld is one of the co-founders of the Athletic Brewing Company. Bill, where do people find this other than golf courses or finish lines of races where you guys are handing them out for free?
We have a bunch of great retail partners throughout Massachusetts. Definitely Whole Foods, Wegmans, Total Wine, Cappy's, Craft Beer Cellar. We have a great store founder on our website, too. So a lot of great retail partners who have enthusiastically helped us out in Mass.
And that website is athleticbrewing.com. Did I get that right?
Yep, nailed it. And Athletic Brewing on Instagram.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for being on the show. And I just want to say continued good luck and success.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club.
New England Honda dealers present Keys to Tailgating Glory. No need to worry when the forecast calls for blistering cold. The all-wheel drive Honda CR-V can handle an icy parking lot with ease. Plus, third-degree frostbite happens to be a team color. Around here, we...
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
right, back to wrap things up on this final edition of the Sports Hub Golf Club for the 2019 season. I counted it up earlier. I think this is our seventh season. So, yes, final show of the seventh season of the Sports Hub Golf Club. Ryan Johnston standing by. So, as you know, this is the cycle of life. As one thing dies, another begins. Or as one thing goes into hibernation, something else blooms. And today, that bloom would be the hockey show, which I believe returns today.
The circle of life.
Yes. Yes, it is. Hockey season begins today, Hardy.
Nice.
I don't think many of us are ready for it.
No. Well, it's been 2 months.
It's too soon. It's almost like we all together went through a really bad breakup and now we're being forced back into the dating pool and we're just not ready.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I said 2 months, excuse me, I did the math and it's been three.
It feels like it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, today is the last preseason game. So it did start up a couple of weeks ago and guys have been around and it doesn't quite feel right. I don't think the team is right. And this, you can say whatever you want about World Series hangovers and NBA and Super Bowl hangovers. I think the Stanley Cup hangover is the most real of all of them.
Well, it's got to be. I mean, it's a short summer. You know, the guys, everybody's beat up at the end of the hockey season. But when you play an extra couple of months of just, you know, the hardest possible sport that you can play. I mean, it just takes an absolute wear on you. And most of these guys need some kind of surgery after the season's over. So they spend weeks, if not months, rehabbing. And I mean, we've seen it with Patrice Bergeron already this year. It's like he came into camp. He's not able to, you know, to really go full bore right away. You've got guys who are still trying to heal up from last year. Now you're asking them to jump right back into it. It's a reason why teams don't go back to the finals, you know, year after year, right? It's such a hard road to get there, just making the playoffs, let alone having to go through that grind to get to the Stanley Cup final, that it's really difficult to anticipate anybody doing it again. And that's why there's also kind of that apprehension maybe going into this year that is it possible that they could really pull this off again?
Yeah, and I think in the case of Bergeron, that's a perfect example. In other sports, you've got a groin injury. You're going to have, at least 3 months before you're expected to do anything of any kind. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that required surgery. But he's had a couple of months before he needed to start skating again, is all. And you know, out of all the things that you can be out there doing and activities engaging in, my gut tells me that skating is probably not the best way to get over a groin injury.
No.
That's probably not going to aid the healing process going out there and skating again. So for him and everybody else, and, you know, look, you could say the same thing for, you know, teams that of course, win the cup. And even for teams that make it to their conference finals, but there's something about getting to that game seven and losing it or winning it. I think you see it on both sides.
Yeah.
It's just the window is shortened that much more and it's that much tougher. But, hey, got some signings here and things are looking good on a couple other fronts. So you certainly have a lot to talk about today. That's not until 9 o'clock, right?
Yes. The guys will be in. Judd and Bob will be in for the full two today. And we'll talk with Billy Jaffe. And we're adding Ty Anderson to the mix this year.
Oh, cool.
Going to be a regular with us as well.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. All right, good. So, all right. Maybe some Pats and Sox stuff in the first hour here before you get to the hockey show.
Yeah, trying to find, you know, figure out something that really is lighting my fire today. So Red Sox ownership is a good one. You know, maybe a little Kyrie today. I don't know.
Okay, good.
We'll figure out something to fill the next hour with. So 617-779-0985. I'm open to suggestions.
Okay, well, O'Brien here with the headlines, and thanks again for listening all season long. Sports Hub Golf Club will be back Masters Weekend of 2020 for season number 8. Kristen Sermon, thank you for your work here this morning and all season long and all the producers and all that stuff. Very good. Ryan Johnston up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.